Charleston Harbor, South Carolina, April 12, 1861. The time is now 4:30 a.m.
A 10-inch mortar shell, its fuse glowing in the dark like the wings of a firefly, arches over the water and falls on Fort Sumter. And the American Civil War has begun. But that first shell has traveled a long way. From Africa, from Boutry and Cormantin and the first slave ships.
As long as South Carolina and Georgia objected so strenuously to the clause abolishing slavery in the Declaration of Independence, there was nothing for it. We took it out.
If we do not secede, Virginia will have to bend her neck beneath the power of the abolition orangutan that skulked to Washington the other day from the wilds of Illinois.
We began by declaring that all men are created equal. And now some say that to enslave others is a sacred right of self-government. Well, these principles just cannot stand together.
Most of us down south never owned no slaves. Big plantations, they had the colored folk. But we'll go along with the plantation owners, because we don't like someone coming down here and telling us how to live.
I, John Brown, am now quite certain that the crimes of this guilty land will never be purged away, but with blood.
War between North and South. Fort Sumter surrendered to Confederacy.
Well, is it a war to preserve the Union or a war to end slavery? Or is it first one and then the other? Whatever it is, this war of brothers, it begins that April dawn at Fort Sumter. The first real clash between the two raw young armies is at Bull Run, just 20 miles from Washington. There are others on the battlefield that day, not soldiers, not officers.
Oh, Zed, I forgot the ice pack. Well, we've got plenty of chicken and pie. You got the picnic hampers firmly tied on? I mean, it would be awful.
You got your parasol along, Bertha. Oh, look at that sky.
There! There, Zed, over there. I see the Mortimer's carriage. We can just go there under that tree with them. We'll have a fine view of the battle.
Who in blazes are all those people? What are all those buggies doing here?
Spectators from Washington, General McDowell. Down to see you trounce General Beauregard, sir.
Well, yes. See to it that they keep clear of the action and off Warrenton Turnpike. I have troops to move. Now, gentlemen, your orders are to clear the Shenandoah Valley of rebel forces.
Look, Zed, I found the opera glasses. Isn't that marvelous?
You better get your parasol, too, Bertha. It's going to be a mighty hot day.
Water. Oh, please.
We've got to support our batteries. Those gunners are dropping one by one.
Don't ride over me. Both hands are gone.
Those horses. No riders. All those horses.
The roads are better from the north. Have the men regroup for a flank attack.
Everything goes wrong for the Union troops. The Washington spectators see disaster before they turn their carriages and flee for home. And behind them comes the defeated army, straggling back to Washington through the drizzling rain.
Come on, Eddie. We'll get you back. You just hold on to me now. Just a little way to go. Look, see all them things in the road? We'll call them out, and that'll make the steps go easier. There's a canteen, see? And two hats. And there's some lady's parasol. And an old broke harness there. No, we won't call out the horses. Let them rest in peace.
That evening, Confederate troops patrol the Potomac Heights, overlooking a beleaguered Washington and a desperate President Lincoln. Lincoln had called for volunteers to serve just 3 months in the Army, but the Battle of Bull Run has made it clear that this war is going to be a long, costly struggle. And there are many in the North who feel that Lincoln is incompetent for his office among them General George B. McClellan, who takes command of the Army of the Potomac after Bull Run.
I went to the White House, where I found the original guerrilla about as intelligent as ever. What a specimen to be at the head of our affairs now.
When Lincoln hears of McClellan's open contempt for him, what does he say?
I would hold McClellan's horse for him if that would help to win the war.
And Lincoln's strategy for winning the war?
3 major objectives. Blockade the southern coast, cut somehow through the Confederacy from west to east, and capture the Confederate capital at Richmond.
In Richmond, Virginia, sits the president of the Confederate States of America, Jefferson Davis. Unlike Lincoln, Davis looks every inch a president with a distinguished, well-formed head, thin lips, and a goatee beard. But his health is not the best. He is blind in one eye and suffers from neuritis and dyspepsia, 2 ailments which don't do much to help his uneven temper. Today, though, he is in a good mood.
Please, Mr. Mallory, do tell me more.
Well, you already know that Mr. Lincoln is having a difficult time raising the huge army he seeks.
A pity, Mr. Mallory, a pity.
He's so desperate, sir, that he's ordered a naval blockade of our entire Confederacy.
With what, Mr. Secretary? With what?
Well, for starters, New York ferry boats, barges, ocean-going steamers, anything that will float and can mount a gun.
Lincoln's Navy is about to gain an unexpected addition. An armed frigate of the Confederate Navy now moored in Charleston Harbor. The 3 officers of this ship, the Planter, are white. The crew are all slaves. On this May evening, the officers have left the ship to be with their families ashore. And a fireman aboard the Planter, a 23-year-old slave named Robert Smalls, takes over command of the ship. For months, Smalls has been waiting for such a chance. While waiting, he has studied the Planter, has learned how to pilot her himself, and he has memorized the signals needed to get out of the harbor. Now, he is ready.
Fire the boilers and get ready to castle!
Now, if anything goes wrong, we'll blow the Planter up and ourselves with it. And if that don't come off, we'll link our hands together and jump into the sea.
Just before dawn, the Planter leaves her berth and moves slowly out of the harbor. Robert Smalls stands on the deck in the captain's coat and wide-brimmed hat and gives the proper signals at each harbor post until the Planter is safely out to sea.
Now lower the flag. Where's the sheet?
The flag of the Confederacy is dropped, and a flag of truce unfurls in the early dawn light. Smalls surrenders the Planter to the first Union ship he encounters.
I thought the Planter might be of some use to Uncle Abe.
The North has many advantages in this war, more men and better equipment. But the South has leaders who are brilliant military men. Scholars in the art of war. Robert E. Lee, tall, white-bearded, sits astride his great gray horse Traveler on a point overlooking the battlefield at Fredericksburg. He watches as his men turn back the Union attack.
It is well war is so terrible, or we should get too fond of it.
The commander-in-chief of the Union Army has a little military experience, too. Abe Lincoln once spent a little over 2 months as a private during the Black Hawk War, not seeing one enemy, just stumbling through the swamps of southern Wisconsin.
Well, I did have a good many bloody battles with the mosquitoes.
Now it lies with him to win a war and hold the nation together. He needs good generals, and he will spend most of the war looking for them. First, there's General George McClellan, who waits, always.
McClellan is suffering from his old affliction, the slows.
McClellan, who procrastinates.
If General McClellan does not want to use the army, I would like to borrow it.
McClellan, who loses his chances and waits some more.
I have just read your dispatches about sore-tongued and fatigued horses. Will you pardon me for asking what the horses of your army have done since the Battle of Antietam that fatigues anything?
And then there are Generals Pope, Burnside, and Fighting Joe Hooker, who plans a brilliant pincer attack and instead gets caught in one himself. But in the West, a strong general comes into view, Ulysses S. Grant. Grant's past record for drinking is against him, however, and there are those who want him removed.
I can't spare this man. He fights.
Heroes? This war is full of them. Generals and privates, women dressed as men, young boys becoming men. Some are only 10 years old and most are under 21. The heroes of the Civil War come in all sizes and ages and colors. Most histories of the war will overlook the important part played by thousands of black soldiers who fight with valor for the Union cause. In 200 engagements, 36,000 Negro soldiers give their lives for their country. 22 black soldiers receive the nation's highest honor, the Congressional Medal of Honor. And in this war so crowded with heroes, there are, well, there are others, too. Mark Twain, for instance, who falls out of a hayloft, sprains his ankle, and goes back home.
I could have become a soldier myself if I'd waited. I'd got part of it learned. I knew more about retreating than the man that invented retreating.
The war goes on. 1862. 1863. 1864.
The dead in this war, there they lie, strewing the fields and woods and valleys and battlefields of the South. Virginia, the Peninsula, Malvern Hill and Fair Oaks, the banks of the Chickahominy, the terraces of Fredericksburg, Antietam Bridge, the grisly ravines of Manassas, the bloody promenade of the wilderness, the varieties of the strayed dead, Gettysburg, Vicksburg, Chattanooga, the trenches of Petersburg, the dead, our dead, for South or North, ours all. Somewhere they crawled to die, alone, in the bushes, low gullies, or on the sides of hills.
And the living?
Chet Walker just got a furlough this morning of 10 days to go home to get married. I'm a great mind to start courting myself to get me a furlough.
If you come home, I'll marry you. Anytime you come home, love has pierced me with his never-erring dart. I yield to you my heart, most willingly in wedlock. I with you would gladly join, and know for you I shall never repine.
I have come to the conclusion that you have forgot me entirely. I want to get home to see you all so bad I don't know what to do. It seems from your letters like all the old people is dying off there in Ohio. That's the way of the world. The old must die, and the young must die.
I am very sorry to hear that you are a-marching, for I'm afraid that you're going into a battle. This is a world of trouble.
We find the calicanthe growing in the woods about Williamsburg. Also lupins and azaleas and many other flowers I noticed while filing through the woods during the battle at that place.
Hey, Johnny Reb! Hey there, 3rd Missouri!
Hey, Lord Yankee!
Got any tobacco?
Yeah! Got any coffee?
Yeah, come and get it.
Won't you?
No.
A part of Company K and some of the enemy came together and stocked arms and talked for a long time. Our men cooked coffee and treated them, and afterward, each one took up his position again, and they began to fire at each other again, but not as hard as before.
I can bear the storms of the wintry blast for thy sake. O Miss S.J.H., be thou ever blessed and beautiful as thou art, and idle to my throbbing heart. If I had the wings of an eagle, to thee I would fly. Methinks I can hear in my midnight dreams thy soft and gentle voice. But alas, when I wake, I am in a soldier tent.
I feel like a lonesome dove that has lost their mate. My pen is bad, my ink is pale, my love for you shall never fail. I want you to write to me. I must come to a close, so God bless your buttons.
And blackest and loathsomest of all, the dead and living burial pits, the prison pens of Andersonville, Salisbury, Belle Isle.
Two of our men died today. They had shattered limbs, and the worms had got into their wounds.
One of our men was shot for going too near the fence. He's lying here now, dying. No one can help him.
I thought I saw a little stick of firewood, see? But it weren't.
Dysentery's as bad as the guards. As bad as a gun. It kills more men. And it smells worse.
We lost two by death today. Arteries burst. Surgeon absent. Bled to death.
And the northern prisons, Camp Douglas, Camp Chase, Point Lookout?
Our rations for each day. Six, sometimes only four hard crackers and a piece of rusty bacon the size of a hen's egg.
Catching and eating rats has become a common thing.
But five chaws of tobacco will buy a rat.
My fingers are too cold to hold a pen.
Barefoot in the snow.
Standing water that we drink. A turgid, salty, jellified mass of waggletails, worms, dead leaves, dead fish.
Meanwhile, the business of killing goes on.
Cut somehow through the Confederacy from west to east.
On the western front, Grant circles Vicksburg, though this means cutting himself loose from his base of supplies.
Where's your personal baggage, General Grant?
Here, in my pocket.
What's that, sir?
My toothbrush. It's here in my pocket. Now come along.
Lincoln vows that if Grant takes Vicksburg...
He is my man, and I am his for the rest of the war.
On July 4th, 1863, Vicksburg falls after a siege of 47 days. Now the way is open for General William Tecumseh Sherman to try to force his way to the sea. In the spring, he sets out with his troops to fight his way across the Georgia countryside.
Mountain, forest, river, ravine.
From Chattanooga to Atlanta, slowly, grappling on each rise, fighting for each valley, the Confederates making each inch pay.
Drop those cows into that pond there and shoot them, soldier. Should fix up the water real nice. Yanks won't be so hot on our tail once they get a little thirsty.
Sherman desolates as he goes, burning the land and the crops, the homes, leaving the South a charred and bitter place. He knows what horror he's leaving behind.
You cannot qualify war in harsher terms than I will. War is cruelty, and you cannot refine it.
Sherman, a name to sear the South. He reaches Atlanta through a ribbon of smoke, and it falls. He destroys it. He moves on to the sea. Sherman's troops, following his orders, forage liberally on the land. Perhaps too liberally.
Like famished wolves they come, breaking locks and whatever else. My turkeys, my hens and chickens, my young pigs. They are shot down in my yard and hunted as if they were rebels themselves. The burnt country. Our beautiful land. Now, just the burnt country.
See that chimney stack there? You can just see her through those charred stumps. Standing up like some bitter joke. 'Cause that's my home.
We call them Sherman Sentinels, those chimney stacks. All across the land.
Now it is just a matter of time.
And capture the Confederate capital at Richmond.
Richmond, April 1865.
Will you have more champagne punch, ma'am?
Oh, thank you, Doctor. But you know it's only water.
I imagine the squirrel I ate today was a partridge.
My doctor, where did you find a live squirrel around Richmond? Not at the hospital.
Poor chap, he didn't seem to realize there's a war on.
However did you catch him, Doctor?
Why, ma'am, he was too weak from hunger to run.
Confederacy is now shattered. The soldiers exhausted, trying to hold lines by small miracles of will.
From the 25th of March to the 9th of April, my men did not take off their boots.
And so, 4 days later, Lee surrenders to Grant in the parlor of a house at Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia. What do they do, these two generals, when they meet face to face after 4 years of war? General Lee, in full uniform with a sword in a gold and leather scabbard, waits at one end of the room with his officers. His dark eyes look out through the open door into the spring afternoon and beyond. Grant enters the parlor, peering a little into the dimness. His eyes are tired, he's been riding long, and his clothes are dusty and soiled. He wears no weapons. He walks to Lee, and they greet each other. Grant introduces his officers.
General Grant, is your General Lawrence Williams close at hand?
Sir?
Yes, you know my son Custis was reported dead, and your General Williams most kindly sent me word this morning that my son is safe. I'd like to thank him myself.
Of course. Major, the sender runner to General Williams...
Later, a little table is brought from the corner... and General Grant writes out the terms of surrender. He stands and walks toward General Lee, who rises, takes the paper, and reads it through.
That the officers may retain their sidearms and their personal baggage. Yes, that will have a most happy effect. General, our cavalry furnish their own horses. These men will want to plow and plant corn.
Oh, yes, yes. Most of the men in your ranks are small farmers, aren't they? Well, I know what a horse means to a farmer. The United States doesn't want their horses. Now, I'll give orders that every man who owns a horse or a mule can take it home.
When the surrender has been made and accepted, the two generals start for the door.
General Lee, I must apologize for my appearance. When I received your letter, I was 4 miles away from my wagon, in which I keep my arms and uniforms. It was my thought that you would rather receive me as I am than be detained here while I rode back for them.
Yes, General Grant, of course. You're quite right. I'm much obliged to you, sir.
And they pass through the door into the April afternoon.
The hills are ripe with wheat. Begonias all in bloom. The trees are just beginning to leaf out.
This has been another program in the series Our Nation's Heritage, produced and presented as a public service by Standard Oil Company of California.